We understand that the majority of the committee members broadly agree with the classification proposed by the staff, which is that cash payments for contingent and fair consideration for which liabilities are recognized at the acquisition date should be classified as investing activities, and cash payments for additional contingent and fair consideration arising after the measurement period should be classified as operating activities. Cash payments related to interest resulting from the discount of the liability should be classified as financing or operating activities in accordance with other interest expenses. This is view one in the paper. However, the committee asked the staff to do further analysis on this issue in order to assess whether the issue could be solved through the annual improvement process.
You're going to have to speak more loudly.
More loudly.
Okay.
Up the volume.
Therefore, we perform outreach with users of financial statements. We verify whether the classification proposed by the staff is consistent with the tentative decision of the board on the deceased statement of cash flows. We assess the issue against the annual improvement criteria. We drafted a potential amendment to IS 7 according to view 1. In addition, we drafted two other possible amendments according to the other view presented in the paper, view 2 and view 3. Regarding the outreach with users of financial statements, we received 3 responses. All the respondents agree with view 1 for contingent consideration payments. 2 respondents fully agree with view 1 for deferred consideration payments, and 1 respondent partially agree with us, because he noted that deferred consideration payments have a closer relationship with financing activity, but because of problems in defining the boundary between investing and financing activities, it might be better to classify both types of payments as investing activities. Regarding consistency with the tentative decision on the board on the lessee statement of cash flows, we noted that our conclusions are in conformity with the tentative decision that a lessee should classify as operating activities cash paid for variable lease payments that are not included in the measurement of the liability to make lease payments. On the basis of the assessment under the annual improvement criteria, we think that the committee should recommend to the board to amend IS 7 to clarify the classification of the statement of cash flows of contingent and deferred consideration payments. We support view 1 in the paper, and as a consequence, we support the amendment drafted in Appendix A. We are asking the committee if they agree with our conclusion and recommendation, and if they have comments on the proposed text of the amendment as shown in Appendix A. Thank you.
Comments? Kito?
Just wanted to make sure that I understand that the solution is based on the wording in IS 7, so investing is only something that you can recognize, and for business combinations, contingent considerations you don't recognize as cost of an asset. Just want to make sure that we are discussing another issue, I think tomorrow or today, contingent consideration for single assets. If the outcome would be for them that they will be part of cost, then the solution for them would be all is investing. Formally, I would agree with this conclusion under IS 7, but I don't want to stress the faithful presentation thing again, but because we did that several times before, it just strikes me that that, you know, wouldn't make a lot of sense. And just to give you another example, if the contingent consideration, let's say you have two companies, they make an estimate of the contingent consideration in a similar situation for the acquisition of a business, one of the companies, the estimate is 100% correct, so the whole amount would then be investing. For the other company, where the estimate was not correct, only part of it would be investing and the rest would be operating, even though the situation is the same, only the estimates were different. So from a point of view, does that make sense and gives that the right information to the reader? I would say no. Based on IS 7, investing is only something that is recognized in the balance sheet, and that's in IS 7. I understand that. I think the conclusion is correct. I just want to point out that I don't think it gives a faithful presentation, especially when you compare the two situations that I just described.
Okay, let's go Joanna, Andrew, Laurence, Cass.
I guess my point is whether or not, I actually agree with the recommendation to amend IS7 on the basis that you said it meets the criteria. I guess I argue, is it really clarifying or correcting, or is it writing a rule, to be honest? And I guess I'm coming, in my mind, it's writing a rule. How much detailed guidance do we need to give about, I mean, this is such a specific thing, and I hate to say this, but quite frankly, do I care? And it will be obvious with an accounting policy choice as to where it is. And therefore, do we really need to make an amendment? I don't see it as clarifying. I see it, I think, as a rule, but I'm not going to die in a ditch over it.
Okay, I've got a whole bunch, but I think Andrew's next on the list.
Well, I think I said last time that I didn't think we needed to do anything because these transactions are normally significant, so it's easy to see what has been done. But on the basis we are going to do something, I think I prefer Appendix B, stick everything in the same place, nice and simple. Not all contingencies, I don't think, are directly related necessarily to operating results. They could be asset-based. Having said that, you know, if we want to go to view one, I'm not going to die in a ditch for that. I would have a question, though, on the drafting, because it says cash payments for increases in the fair value of contingent consideration should be classified as operating, and that cash flows in relation to deferred consideration recognised at the acquisition date is investing. And it's a picky point, but it sort of kind of just demonstrates some of the complications here. When you unwind the discount on the deferred consideration, you're increasing the deferred consideration number from the number you booked at the acquisition date. So is that a change in fair value, or does the final cash settlement, how does the final cash settlement on deferred consideration after you've unwound the discount fit into paragraph 39A?
No, I don't think it's an increase in fair value. Personally, I think that the interest should be classified as operating or financing activities in accordance with other interest expenses.
Right, so you start off with 100, the discounted number, you amortize, you unwind it, increase the number to 120 by unwinding the discount, and when you pay the 120, 100 goes to investing. Is that what you're saying? And 20 goes?
Or operating or financing, okay. So in accordance with the accounting policy of the company.
Okay. All right.
I think I prefer option two.
All right.
I disagree with the view one. I would start with deferred consideration, and I really struggle not having the ability to classify cash outflows related to deferred consideration as financing activities. And this also ties to the comment that is made later on, that is when you have interests on the deferred payment, you just apply the normal rule. But in order to apply the normal rule, this means that you had a financing transaction. Mm-hmm. And so the deferred consideration should be classified as financing. Otherwise, why would interest be recognized according to the other treatments of IAS 7? No. So deferred consideration, I do believe that financing activities make sense. With respect to contingent consideration, there is always, contingent consideration, you have it either because the two parties cannot agree on the fair value of the assets being transferred, and so you include that clause in order to determine what's better fair value, Or you may also have a financing element in it. So I could also see a financing element into contingent consideration. However, for measure of simplicity, I can understand that you try not to identify that financing element. I, however, disagree with the view to say that when you have a remeasurement of the contingent consideration, it does not relate to any asset. Yes, surely it does relate to an asset because you have already the asset on the books. So it's just that the payment for the fair value or the payment which you agreed for purchasing that asset, you couldn't agree exactly at the date of transaction, so you're including these clauses so as to adjust the price you paid for it. So this would effectively support then treating the adjustments not as operating, but more as investing, if you consider that the initial amount should be classified as investing. So I do have difficulty treating the subsequent changes in contingent consideration as operating.
Then everything investing. But yeah,
I know. Except that the consideration, as I said, if the consideration not to treat it as financing, I do have a problem.
Even if is accounting in profit or loss.
Sorry?
Even if the increase in fair value is accounting in profit or loss.
Yeah, well, that's what the standard says, but I'm not splitting. There are not two elements of the contingent consideration, just the price you paid and then the adjustment date. I don't split. It's just a single thing. It's a single contract. So I don't split into two pieces, one that goes to P&L and one you purchase it. I just see it as one thing.
Okay. I had no idea this issue was going to be this popular. I have Kaz, Charlotte, Peggy, Sarah, Ruth, John, and Scott. Kaz, you're up. Okay. Thank you. And Luca, not to leave anybody out.
Last time I said this should be investing activity, and then maybe I changed my mind. I reviewed, consider one more time, and my view is none of these. I think we shouldn't do anything because it depends on the situation. Let me start with the example, maybe same example as I said last time, original estimate of the consideration 100, and it turns out to be 120, so we pay additional 20. So that 20 additional is based on the achievement of the target of the earnings. Then I think we should categorize it as an operating, because it's a P&L adjustment and a cash flow. I think it makes sense to categorize an operating cash flow for additional 20. But if we originally pay half of the estimated consideration, 50, and then achieve the target, and then we pay 70 as a total combination, I'm not comfortable to split that 70 into 50 investing and 20 operating. And then in that case, that 70 could be 50 or 30. So it, particularly if a earning target is going down and it ends up to the lower than we expected, that 30, so that make it more complicated. So that is one thing. I think it will be categorized as an investing for both way, original one and 70 or 30, whatever the second deferred payment. So that is one thing. And I understand the board discussions when IFRS 3 revision was made, that the contingent payment is strongly related to contingency of the certain asset or liability. For example, like one particular company has a litigation case, and we don't know when it turns out, but it turns out for a certain time, then conditional consideration is set up based on that litigation case. And after the acquisition, that litigation case turns out to be favorable, and we, the company can release the liability. We have a favorable P&L, and then if the parent company needs to pay additional consideration based on that contingency change, then question is, we should report it as a part of the operating activity, offsetting the operating cash flow is a favorable liability decrease and payment of the additional consideration, or operating a favorable cash flow and an unfavorable investing activity, which is useful information, is a question mark. So I think it depends on the amount or timing. So it's a kind of judgment how we present to the readers. So, and then particularly I think like that way is a interest expense or interest payment or receipt is we company's policy. We can choose with either operating or financing. So with that, maybe this is one idea we can leave that the company's policy or option to choose. It could be not necessarily a policy, but a case by case could be. But I don't think if we add one view and amend that standard would cause some additional issue. That's my thought. Charlotte?
I think I had a lot of the same point, to be fair. I think not all contingencies are the same, and I think you have to look at them on a case-by-case basis to see what the contingency relates to. Is it an operating profit, basically? I know the feedback I had internally was it should be consistent with how you're recognising the related income and income statement. And I guess I struggle with deferred consideration as to why at least an element of it isn't financing, because that would seem to be intrinsic in the nature. But again, I think it should be on a case-by-case basis and a judgment call.
Peggy?
This is actually a big issue. I've seen it myself in practice. Nobody wants to put anything in operating, and any disbursement anyway into operating, because most management gets evaluated on operating cash flows for their business. So they're always going to find a way to put it in something else. And just in comparing it to IFRS 3, I think it's the only answer you can get, as much as I don't like it. You know, having the excess go to operating, I think that just makes the most theoretical sense.
So you'd be in view one.
I'm in view one.
Okay. Sarah?
Well, I wasn't going to comment on this one, because when I wrote my notes, all I wrote page after page was, this seems like a rule versus a principle. And I thought, well, must be we need a rule. But then Joanna piped up first and said, you know what, I think this is rule versus a principle, and I agree with her. So I'm in the camp of let's not do anything. We have certainly with a company's accounting policy dealing with the transaction, the users of financial statements will be able to see where the cash flows are being categorized, and they'll categorize based upon what they think the economics of the transaction are. And I don't think that we'll serve either preparers or users of financial statements by writing a rule. And I think either of the views, any of the views, one, two, or three, will be rule writing.
Ruth?
I'm in a similar camp. Although, having heard what Peggy said, I wonder whether there's a view four, which is what Charlotte suggested, which is whatever you do, be consistent with your balance sheet and P&L treatment and then disclose it. And I think what the feedback that you receive from the users is they don't really mind as long as there's clear disclosure. So I quite like that approach, which is consistency with the balance sheet and P&L treatment. And that's not really writing so much of a rule. It's writing a bit more of a principle. It's more of a principle than a rule.
Okay. Jean.
On the issue of rule versus principle, I'm not too troubled because in business combination, anyway, there's a rule about how to deal with contingent consideration. I'd like the view one on contingent consideration because it's aligned with the P&L, how it's treated in the P&L. What's more troubling, though, is the situation where if I have a $50 payment, what Kazuha has highlighted, if I have a $50 payment and then a $50, I estimate a $50 additional payment, contingent consideration for a total of 100, and I end up paying 70, then my investment will be 70. But if it's the contrary, then and I pay 120, then my adjustment, my investment is not adjusted for it. Right? So it's adjusted downward, but it's not adjusted if I pay more. It goes to cash from operation. But I can live with view one. I think that's okay. Where I believe I have a disagreement is with respect to deferred consideration, which I see as a financing transaction, similar to when I acquire PP&E and I acquire a mortgage attached to my PP&E. I believe that only the net amount will be a cash disbursement, and then when I settle my mortgage, I believe it's it will be financing, or maybe I'm not. But anyway, I think that it's a way to finance yourself, and then it also resolved the issue of the accretion of this liability is interest and would be treated as interest payment.
Scott.
I think there's different reasons for contingent consideration or arrangements. Lawrence, I think, has suggested that they're because the parties couldn't agree on fair value. I think that's some of them. I think there's also some because the parties agreed on what value the market would place on this entity, but the seller thinks the market is placing too low a value, and the buyer thinks the market is placing too high a value. And so they agree to let it play out.
And it's not an issue of there's a disagreement about the fair value. It's a disagreement about whether that fair value that the market puts on it is really the right value or not. So they agree to share profits going forward. And there's other times when the contingent consideration is, let's face it, to cause some key employees that are coming over to want to work really hard to make the combination work. Even when we escape recording it as compensation, that's often the case. So I do think there's different reasons for different contingency arrangements. Logically, that might lead to different classification in the cash flow statement, as Charlotte and others have said. But realistically, I don't think that's what's being done now. I don't think that companies are looking at their arrangements and saying, you know, what do I really think substantively this is? I think they're saying, I don't want to put any cash outflows in operations. So if we want to not provide a rule and want the arrangements to be evaluated based on their substance, then we need to tell people that. In other words, you don't have a policy that all of your contingent payments are always treated thusly. Rather, you evaluate each one and figure out what the substance is, and that drives what you do. Because I don't think that's what's happening now. Now, maybe we solve this with disclosure, and we just say, you know, disclose what you did with it, and you know, other than that, we don't care. But I'm of the view that that view one, as proposed or and written up in Appendix A, is probably the easiest way to resolve this if it needs to be resolved.
Luca.
I don't see a big issues regarding the fact that we are putting some elements more details respect to a general principle, because I think that is more or less in line with IAS 7 that has its rules inside the principle standards, because classification is something that is sometimes linked with rules and is an item that help you in order to have a more level of comparability. As I said also in September, looking at also the way in which preparers and users look at this kind of transaction, in general, there is a strong support to have only one line item that represents the total amount of the spending that you have sustained in order to have that kind of investment. I fully agree with what Guido said before, in order that could be quite embarrassing to have two situations quite similar with one entity that has been able to do exactly the perfect estimation of the contingent prices and the other that has some adjustments in later periods, and we have two different line items interested. So I fully support view two because I think that's is an easy guideline and help people to have a real comparable information. And this is in line, in my opinion, with want EIS 7, because otherwise EIS 7 probably would have been written in a different way, like look at what you do in your balance sheet or your income statement and then produce a consistent cash flow. On the contrary, EIS 7 has said this is the rule for the cash flow statements.
Okay, I've heard about nine different alternatives. But I think they tend to cluster into three groups. Group one I would broadly describe as do nothing. And there's do nothing buts, but let's broadly describe it as essentially do nothing. And then I, as I was scribbling here, found roughly similar support among the remainder for view one and view two. Although I did hear somebody come up with a view four. So, let's take a straw poll. Do nothing got the most hash marks that I wrote down. Mm-hmm. Who would describe them as in the do-nothing camp? Themselves, excuse me. That's eight?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me rephrase it then. Who would object to do-nothing? Who believes that we absolutely, not absolutely, who believes that we need to do something? Okay. I think then, as I understand the rules of procedure, do nothing wins. Now, how do we describe the agenda decision?
Too late.
I agree. Pardon?
Investing if it's on your balance sheet as an asset, that's view one then. That's why I was, normally I would not object to not taking something on the agenda in this case, but I strongly feel that, and I gave some examples, that this doing nothing would lead into view one, and that would, from my point of view, not give the right information to the readers. That's why I objected.
That's interesting. I would have thought the opposite.
Okay.
But you're probably closer to practice. Laurent, you're certainly closer.
And like Guido, I don't assimilate do nothing as leading to view one. Do nothing, for example, for deferred consideration, if you consider it's deferred consideration, there is a financing element, you would classify as financing activities, which is not what is proposed under view one. And for the change in the liability for contingent consideration, I also would not, as I said, I don't consider it as treating it in two amounts. It all relates to the purchase of the asset that is on the books.
But Scott said that in his view you could have contingent consideration. You could have contingent consideration in a business combination and theoretically conclude that it had three different characteristics, conceivably.
Absolutely. And I agree.
And do nothing wouldn't drive that, but certainly would not preclude that.
So they can be the same thing.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. It would have, that's right, they have both attributes.
Can I just
make a point? Oh, please.
Yeah. It was just really just to remind ourselves why we were discussing this paper this time, because we discussed the issue last time as well. And in IFRAC update, and obviously it's in paragraph 2 of the Gender Paper 7, you'd noticed that the issue was widespread and diverse in practice. Fine, and that you wanted the staff to do more analysis to see whether the issues could be solved through annual improvements. And I just wonder whether the different proposals that we had brought to you for consideration this time as possible different annual improvements, whether what you've concluded now is that no, none of those really address the underlying concerns. And so perhaps the conclusion is, no, we don't think we can address this through annual improvements, but it's a more sort of broader issue.
Yeah. That's what we meant to say.
Okay, what he said.
Okay. Why didn't you just tell us what we meant in the first place?
Okay. Michael and I have been looking at the agenda, and we are in a spot. None of us wants to be here till 5 o'clock tomorrow. Certainly none of us who have to catch an airplane. On the other hand, for all of these issues, there is a constituency that will want to listen in. All I can do is to promise you we'll work quickly tomorrow, and that I do not believe necessarily that we need 2.5 hours for that final session. I can't imagine it taking that. So we'll do the best we can, but I can't see us bringing anything forward.
Well, we can't start that one now.
We don't have the people we need, the board members. We can do that one, certainly. That's 15 minutes it can buy us. In any event, Ruth, you look terribly unhappy with that conclusion.
No, I'm just thinking, could we not do the equity method question? Is there a huge amount of interest in that one?
Yes.
Agenda paper 9.
Now, the staff member for some of these isn't here this afternoon. Yeah. One of them, but no. There's a typo.
Gary was supposed to.
There is an error on the agenda in that paper number 9 wasn't written by Denise, it's written by Gary. And Gary isn't here this afternoon.
He was
this morning, but not this afternoon. Yet another appointment.
We're going to do the closed session this afternoon, and we will do tomorrow's admin session, which would also be closed.
Well, that's not no, that's okay.
All right. Let us move then to agenda paper 15, which is committee work in process. At the conclusion of that, we will close the meeting to outsiders. But for the moment,